The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. On this week's episode, we recap a thrilling final day of the J2 season and look ahead to this Saturday's playoff semi-final with John Steele, Stuart Smith and Charlie Houghton. And as I welcome you in, guys, I'd like to know how you approached match day 42 with obviously 11 games kicking off at the same time and six of them having implications on automatic promotion and or the playoff places. John, you were off Twitter, presumably as it was too tense for your fingers to type in a cohesive manner, but what game or games were you particularly focused on?
We discussed this a little bit in the pre-show in the green room. I was quite busy with some family events over the weekend, so I opted for watching the NHK, Japan State Broadcaster. They showed the Matsumoto versus Tokushima game. I think that's obviously with an eye on the fact that Matsumoto were top of the table going into the final day. And I recorded that, and it was quite surprisingly went on a media blackout, and I was able to watch that in full without any knowledge of what had happened. So that was pretty exciting and weird.
All right, and so John, the NHK did their telecast in kind of a clockwatch fashion, so you were able to see goals from other games go in as they impacted the promotion race.
That's right. NHK being NHK, and anyone who's spent any time in Japan will know they can be a bit, they have their foibles, they're a little bit strange, so they just kind of cut off their sort of multi-game coverage at the Yokohama line, if you like. So they were giving you kind of regular updates on the games with Oita, Yokohama, and the Machida Verde game, but they didn't have any interest at all in the playoff picture, so they didn't mention Omiya at all, really, for example, or Fukuoka. But those games involved in the top four, basically the teams that had a mathematical chance of automatic promotion, they just banged on about them for the whole match, really. But that was, as you say, for me personally, that was it, just about as much excitement as I could cope with.
All right, then. Stuart, I know from your Twitter account that you were at the Nagaragawa Stadium for Gifu's home finale against the Fukuoka, so that obviously occupied most of your attention. But with no goals in that game, did you have a chance to occasionally check your phone and obviously check other scores from the other games?
So in the first half, I was actually pitch side behind the goal, taking photographs, and I've learned from seeing myself on TV checking my phone that it's not actually a good look to be caught on camera doing that. So in the first half, no, I didn't catch any of the other scores. It was only kind of when I went up into the stands for the second half that I could start checking on the scores. The longer the Gifu Fukuoka game went 0-0, the more kind of interested I became in the other scores, and once obviously we'll go into what happened along the day, but once other scores started to come through, it kind of impacted stuff on the pitch. So yeah, the first half no, in the second half yeah, I took more of an interest in other games.
Fair enough then. And Charlie, I know from your tweets that you were on Okayama versus Omiya duty, but I imagine a Football Radar HQ as this futuristic dreamland you can literally watch any game in the world at. So surely you must have allowed yourself to peek in on some other J2 games throughout the day?
Yeah, I did a bit. My main focus was on Okayama Omiya, and then, I mean, it's not as high-tech as you might imagine, but I had like one screen which was split into another sort of four screens. So in little tiny little corners, I managed to try and keep up with Montedio Oita, Matsumoto Vortis, and Kofu Yokohama, and Gifu Vespa.
All right, then. And Charlie, yeah, this is obviously the end of your first season covering J2, and a dramatic final day. Obviously, Stuart and John are veterans of this sort of thing, but fairly gripping, wasn't it?
It was pretty gripping. I think I did expect maybe a few more goals. Like it was more, I would say, a tense finish rather than explosion, I guess.
Yes, not quite the climax we were all anticipating, perhaps. But we will cover all of the games that had so much riding on them throughout the episode, including the three, obviously, that our guests were mainly focused on throughout the afternoon. But just one item of housekeeping to start so I don't forget. On last week's first episode of J-Talk with John and Steve Balm, I referenced many times the scenario that Machida finishing in the top two would spare the 17th place team in J1 from automatic relegation. We're obviously going to come on to talk about Zelvia, where they finished up fourth. So that possibility is gone, and whichever of Kashiwa, Nagoya, Tosu and Shonan end up second from bottom in the top flight will go down automatically. And obviously one of those four teams is likely to end up in a playoff with whoever wins out of Yokohama FC versus Omiya and Tokyo Verde, which we're going to come on to later on, of course. So just to set the scene at the start of the match day for the listeners, Matsumoto and Oita were the top two. Machida, obviously ineligible for promotion but still in with a shot at the title, were third. Yokohama FC were the other team still in with a shot of automatic promotion and or the title. Tokyo Verde, Fukuoka and Omiya were battling it out for two spots in the playoffs. And John, well, it's ended up that Matsumoto are champions, and that that champion, Yuya Hashiuchi, was able to lift the trophy, as Matsumoto claimed the J2 championship. So yes, by hook or by crook, by the result of 0-0, they ended up the champions with a very very big assist handed to them by Montedio Yamagata. But on the day, John, at the end of the season, they've ended up champions and fairly worthy winners, you'd have to say, despite the lack of goals on the final day.
Yes, I think that's pretty fair. I vacillate on this because I kind of believe strongly in the kind of league home and away format, and I think once every team has played each other twice, the best teams usually end up at the top and the poorer teams end up at the bottom. That's why I was kind of so vehemently against the J-League bringing back the two-stage system for J1 a few years back. I have to say, I think the overall quality of the league has been lower than in previous years this year, and I think any of those top seven could have ended up being champions, in my opinion, with a slightly different, run of results, a few points here or there. But yeah, Matsumoto were the ones who did it, and I think you used the phrase by hook or by crook. I think that's pretty much right. I expected them to maybe just grind out a 1-0 win because that was the result they knew before kickoff would guarantee the title. In the end, they went for a kind of pretty rough and hard to watch kind of semi going for it in the first half and then trying to kind of shut up shop in the second, which I have to be honest, looking ahead to next season, I know it's very early and that they, congratulations to them, they should enjoy what they've achieved this season. They're going to need some serious overhaul, I think, if they're going to be competitive in J1 next year. But yeah, they just about got the job done, and I think if you're in the top two after 42 rounds, then you nobody can really argue that you don't deserve it.
All right, well, I'll bring Stuart and Charlie in as well to pay a tribute to the champions. Stuart, yeah, John's mentioned obviously the dour nature of the draw, but I mean, if Hiroyuki Takasaki had his shooting boots on in the first half hour, they could have been over the hill and far away. There were four decent chances for the striker. Unfortunately for Yamaga and for their supporters' nerves, he wasn't able to put any of them away. But yeah, Stuart, I mean, as John says, the team who finishes top at the end of 42 games deserves it, and yes, Yamaga deserve it.
Yeah, that's the headline, really. I think without wanting to parrot what John just said, I mean, it's difficult to argue after a 42-game slog in J2. If you end up at the top of the pile, you'll have a bit of luck along the way. But, I mean, there's only so far that luck will take you. And, yeah, fair play to Matsumoto Yamaga. It's been a very Matsumoto-type season. They haven't scaled the heights so much. They haven't played some, like, scintillating attacking football and... scintillating. That's right.
We knew what you meant.
And then, but they, you were right as well. Yeah, I mean, Takasaki could have had a hat-trick in the first half. I mean, a couple of headers, hit one just past the post. He's had a down year this year. He hasn't played as well as he did last year. But, like, on the flip side, he's the starting centre-forward for the J2 champions. So I think I'll agree with John as well that they're going to need some... they're going to need some reinforcements, and they're going to need a little bit, not a little bit, a lot more invention, I think, especially from the midfield area. But yeah, it's hard to argue that they are worthy champions, even if it did come about with a little bit of help from Monterio Yamagata at the end, which we'll come on to. But yeah, fair play to the Matsumoto.
Most definitely. And Charlie, yeah, we know that you you started on J2 duty pretty much around the midway point of the season. So since then, obviously, yeah, Matsumoto, not the flashiest side, but have they been, I don't know, in some respects the most consistent or the most impressive? Or it's entirely possible that they haven't really impressed you at all in the times you've watched them, because, as I say, they're certainly not the easiest on the eye at times. But, yeah, how have you found covering them in your first half season of watching J2?
Yeah, I think they aren't necessarily the most exciting team. I think, yeah, to a point, I don't want to go in again on Takasaki, but it seems like I will. I feel like if he had a different striker, that they probably would have scored, like, not just in the last game, but in recent weeks, would have scored a lot more goals. Maybe if Nagai had been starting a few of those more games, they might have had a few more victories and maybe been ahead by a few more points. Although that always leads me to the debate. If someone gets chances, maybe there is something in that, in getting into those positions. But yeah, I can't disagree with what's been said before by Stuart and John that, yeah, they're worthy winners. The team that's top of a long league season is the one that seems to go up. And I think there is, yeah, probably 7 or 8 teams that were maybe close and near them, but, yeah, worthy winners.
Yes, indeed. And Yamagata will have a second crack at J1 in 2019. And, yes, they do have a lot of work to do before that J1 season gets going, but I'm sure there'll be some reinforcements coming in to the Allwyn Stadium over the winter. All right, well, we've mentioned Yamagata a couple of times. They did Matsumoto a huge favour and basically handed them the title by equalising at home against Oita in the 91st minute. The only first half goal that had any impact on the automatic promotion picture or the playoff places came in the 18th minute, and it came from Oita's Yuji Hoshi. He shot home first time after Tomoki Iwata's surging run and square ball across the box. And yes, from the 18th minute on, all the way into stoppage time in these games, Oita were top of the pile until Alvaro Rodriguez lashed home through a forest of bodies from 25 yards in the 91st minute, as I've mentioned. So then, after Oita had seen their lead taken away by Rodriguez, there was some anxious moments for the Oita players and staff. They had to wait around until all of the other full times and indeed their promotion was confirmed. So, yes, all right. Well, Stuart, I'll come to you first on this one. Oita have ended up with by far the best attack in J2 at the end of this season, and we wondered whether goal difference would come into the picture. Indeed, it has. To separate Oita, Machida, and Yokohama FC. Obviously, yeah, Machida weren't eligible for promotion, but yeah, that goal difference has finally got Oita over the line and back into J1 to put a bow on this amazing yo-yo stretch that Oita have had, Stuart. It's remarkable they've gone from the top flight all the way down to J3, and now they are heading back to J1 again.
Yeah, it's quite the yo-yo act. I mean, just as an aside, it kind of gives a good blueprint for other teams that, for example, may come down and may have troubles in J2, can even go to J3. I mean, look, Machida were in J3 not so long ago as well. So teams like that give other teams a little bit of hope and hopefully some good prints to follow. And yeah, it's kind of odd how the game the game filtered out in the end, because, yeah, they were ahead for so long, And they had plenty of chances to add to that lead as well. But then they got done with that sucker punch in injury time. I think, it was from outside the area of the goal. And I think it got a deflection as well because it took it away from the goalkeeper. And, like, you probably watched the same highlights that I did. Like, when I watched them, I felt like the commentator was actually disappointed when that goal went in. There was kind of, oh, it's a goal.
Right.
And like nothing, like no emotion in it. And I think even the commentators knew that a goal from a team with nothing to play for could kind of ultimately affect the destination of the title and even like automatic promotion as well. But luckily, and happily for Oita, the other results went their way. And again, like, I feel that if you took Matsumoto's defense and paired it with Oita's forwards, I think you'd have a fairly competent J1 side, or at least a J1 side that would have a chance of survival. I think kind of the opposite of what we said with Matsumoto. I think Oita need some defensive reinforcements and they need some kind of solidity at the back because they're great to watch going forward, but J1 teams will just pick them off at will. And so that's something to look forward to for them. But I think, like we said with Matsumoto, it's hard to argue that, you know, you finish in the top two at the end of the year, they scored plenty of goals, they're easy on the eye, and yeah, they might think that, oh, we let the title go in the last minute, but if you'd have given them second place at the start of the season, they would have taken it, and I think they're well deserved. And I'd just like to say about, I think we'll come on to it when we speak about Gifu and Fukuoka, Yamagata had nothing to play for, but they played. And they played like they upheld the competitive nature and the competitive spirit of the league. Gifu did as well. Vanfori Kofu did, even though they lost against Yokohama. So I think that's a good thing to see. Like teams with ostensibly nothing to play for, but they turned up and you know they put their best foot forward and like no team laid down just to make the job easier for other teams as well. So that was good to see.
All right, and Charlie, so as I mentioned, Oita have ended up with the best attack in J2, but by some distance, the worst defence of the promotion and playoff contenders. So, we've mentioned that Matsumoto will need to do some reinforcing in the winter. I imagine that Oita's priorities in the winter transfer window might be stiffening up their defence as their strike force looks reasonably intact for a push at a J1 survival, perhaps. But yes, they'll definitely need to tighten things up at the back, you'd say.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think it's quite interesting that, even though they're the top goal scorers in the league by quite a way, the goals have all been pretty well split with Fujimoto, Issa and Mitsuhira have all contributed to the, 10-ish goals and Matsumoto. So it's all quite spread around and very much a sort of team attack and no like single player that sort of dragged them up. So I think that could help hold them in good stead for next year.
All right, and John, before we moved off Matsumoto, I should have mentioned that both yourself and Stuart were correct in your predictions a couple of months ago, perhaps, that Matsumoto would finish top of J2. Maybe that was the October J2 special, perhaps. So, so congratulations to both John and Stuart for getting that prediction right. As we work our way through, we might point out a couple that the gents got wrong, but that's by the by. But John, so a brief word on Oita, if you like, before we move on to the Tokyo Classic.
I'm very much kind of now that round 42 sort of done and dusted a part of what, obviously from our definitive roundup. I do, you know, your mind naturally starts to kind of think about next season. I think what's been said about the need to kind of shore up the defence for Oita is very true. And I think with the way they attack and the way they do leave themselves exposed at the back, it does remind me a lot of Nagoya. from last season, obviously, where they sort of monstered J2 to a certain extent. Then it found it a lot tougher going up to the big league, if you like. So I think that will be something to be mindful of. Scoring so many goals is good. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at the fact that, you know, they finished behind Matsumoto, even though they scored, you know, 22 more goals and got a superior goal difference, it's not only about scoring goals. You do have to be able to manage games that are tight. And, you know, especially in J1, obviously the goal will be to avoid relegation, I assume, as they're going up. So, yeah, I do think Nagoya might be a blueprint. Certainly Nagoya from the first half of this season might be a blueprint, like what not to do. Yeah. And then maybe Nagoya since then, they're a little bit better, aren't they? So there might be some lessons to be learned. But yeah, congratulations to Oita. I think I tend to focus when I analyse teams, I look at the defensive shortcomings, and that's one of the reasons why Oita have always had a kind of question mark against them. But there's certainly nothing wrong with what they do when they go forward. Some of their quick passing and sort of quick transition, they're certainly much easier on the eye than Matsumoto football, for example. So yeah, good luck to them again. I think, again, if you're top two at the end of the season, you've earned your chance to have a crack at J1, and I just hope that they... you know, they don't have a terrible start and then find themselves up against it. And I hope they can maybe perhaps snaffle some good defenders from teams that have missed out on the playoffs or teams, you know, in and around that top six in J2 or even the lower J1 teams that can help them out next season.
All right, so I said we were going to move on to the Tokyo Classic next, the Machida and Tokyo Verde, but of course Yokohama FC have ended up finishing above Zelvia and in third. So let's do that game next. And Stuart, you mentioned before we started recording that you've watched the entire second half of that game since Saturday concluded. So the big story in the first half of that game, of course, was Leandro Dominguez, Yokohama FC's talisman, went off injured in the 41st minute, and then just past the hour, the Yokohama FC keeper Yuta Minami was called into action and made a big save to keep out Kazuki Kozuka's header. A minute later, up the other end, and the Kofu keeper Hiroki Oka made a stunning reaction save to keep out Kosuke Saito's flick at the near post. But in the 70th minute, Saito was not to be denied, and he lashed home from the edge of the box after Oka had punched away Takuya Nagata's free kick. So Yokohama FC were just at one of two of our top seven at the start of play to pick up all 3 points, Stuart. It wasn't enough to get them automatic promotion due to the draws for Yamaga and Trinita that we've already discussed. But yes, on the final day, getting your business done, a huge feather in Yokohama FC's cap, and they now have a weekend off, and we can discuss whether that's a good thing or not at this point of things. But yes, they got the job done, and full credit to them for their performance on Saturday, Stuart.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think the week off will do them the power of good, especially like you just referenced there, Leandro Dominguez went off injured in the first half. I didn't actually see what happened. I think I don't know if he got a kick earlier on in the game, but he just seemed to kind of sit down on the floor, and like immediately the stretcher was called and he was taken off. I tried to look for some injury information on him like today in preparation for this pod, but I couldn't find anything. So his status, I guess, is still a bit up in the air. But yeah, I mean, Yokohama have done really, really well to get themselves into this position. I think the coach, Tavares, after the game, he said that, look, we dropped points against, what did he reference? Yamaguchi, Mito, and Kanazawa. So they dropped points against them at home during the season, and all they needed was an extra point from one of those games, and they would have gone up automatically. And he was quite philosophical after the game. They did well. I think John said last week on the pod that this was a potentially difficult game for them, and I completely agreed with that assessment. But they played like a team in form, and they played like a team that had promotion on the line. That's not to say that Corfu didn't turn up. There was certainly a little bit of niggle in the game. I think Eder Lima, the and Corfu kind of centre back slash left winger slash centre forward, wherever he fancies playing, started kind of dishing out a few hard tackles. But then Yokohama can give as good as they get. I think you do well to rile this team, and they've got plenty of veterans in the team. They've got plenty of experience. They've got obviously Minami in goal, Calvin Yongapin, Iba, Leandro Dominguez. I mean, there's plenty of experience in there. Sato Kensuke is in there, and like they'll be a tough out. They'll be a tough out in this J2 playoff, and I think depending on who kind of drops into 16th, I think it'll be a tough out for the 16th place team as well. I think something that came up, I was discussing this on Twitter with someone, I think this is their year. If they don't do it this year, like I just referenced all those older players, and I forgot to mention the oldest one of them all, I think if they don't go up this year, it's going to be a bit more difficult next year, just because everyone's kind of a year older. So maybe the stars are aligning this year, and they eked it out, and they did well. The goal reminded me, you can probably cut this if you want, but the goal reminded me of, I'm sorry to bring this up, Ben. Like, remember Eric Cantona's FA Cup final goal against Liverpool? Mm. When David James punched it and it got to the edge of the area? Mm. Yeah, like Saito's goal reminded me of that a little bit when I saw it. But Yokohama did well, and they'll be, like I said before, they'll be a very difficult proposition for whoever comes up against them.
Yeah, so just mentioning, I mean, Leandro Dominguez will be, hopefully he'll be back. I guess we don't know the extent of his injury, but since I've come onto the league, he's probably, I'd say, the single player that stood out the most. I think before I'd come on, I'd heard a lot about Iba, and he is still a really effective player, but Leandro Dominguez is like the creative hub of everything, and his delivery is just sort of pinpoint, and like whenever they get a free kick or he puts in a cross, it has often made the difference in these like later games for Yokohama, and I really enjoy watching him play. And then you look at him, and like when you hear he's 35, you get quite surprised, because he could easily be like, he looks 40 plus, I'd say, with an Eden. He's sort of short and dumpy.
Indeed, but yeah, still very, very effective, obviously. And John, yeah, obviously everybody at Mitsuzo will have their fingers crossed that Leandro will be back for the playoff final in a couple of weeks. I guess we can be a glass half full and hope that he will be. If he were to miss, though, how much of an impact would that have on the way Yokohama FC went about that to playoff final? Obviously, they only need a draw from the game, whoever they come up against, whether it's Omiya or Verdi. So they might be able to set up a little bit more defensively from the start. But is there anybody waiting in the wings, perhaps, that could possibly pick up and fill some of the void that Leandro would leave?
I think that's a difficult question to answer, but I don't think there's anybody who can fill Leandro Dominguez's shoes in terms of quality. As Charlie was alluding to there, he's basically a J1 level player, I think, and that Yokohama don't have anyone on the bench who can replicate his passing or dead ball ability. I think what Tavares, the coach, might be tempted to do is to put two players behind Iba instead of having just Leandro in the sort of withdrawn role. So that would probably be Naoki Nomura, who replaced him, I think, off the bench when he was injured on Saturday, and then maybe one other, whether that would be Kosuke Saito or somebody else. But yeah, as you said, I don't think the J League's officially calling it a playoff final anymore, because they still have to play the 16th place J1 team. I think it's just like game two. It's called like playoff game two now. But yeah, I think, as you said, they only need a draw to advance, so that would probably play into the thinking as well. I'm not sure it's necessarily ominous that we don't know any injury news about Leandro Dominguez, though, because the J League's notoriously sort of shady about these things. I'd imagine he'd probably be back, and maybe if it's only on the bench, if I was the coach, I'd be tempted to put him on the bench even if he's not fit, just to play some mind games.
Most definitely. All right. Well, John, yes, I'll come back to you as we review the previously mentioned Tokyo Classic. Machida won, Tokyo Verde won, it finished, and we a few chances in the first half hour for Zelvia. Ryohei Hayashi had a chance early in the second half for Verde, and then the game burst into life around the 74th minute when Zelvia substitute Yuya Nakamura headed onto the roof of the net. But then 2 minutes later, Hayashi scored the opener for Verde. And, well, the floodgates didn't open, did they? But, yes, after Verde had gained the ascendancy, John, Machida hit straight back pretty much straight away, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. And I think it was probably important that they... obviously, there wasn't much time left in the game at all with Verde scoring with about 15 minutes left. But I think it was important for Machida to respond quickly. And they did that with that goal from Otani. But yeah, they just couldn't force it over the line and get a winner. And yeah, when the final whistle went, there was a lot of Zelvia players sort of kind of sank to the floor in despair, which is understandable. But I think hopefully they picked themselves up quite quickly and don't think they really let anybody down or disgrace themselves in any way, shape or form this season or in that particular game. Fantastic attendance as well. I think the kind of pre-match noise was they were hoping to get 10,000 people into the Nozita Athletic Stadium, and they managed that, 10,013. So I'm pretty sure that must be a record for the ground. And it's hard to imagine it actually holds that many, so I'm not really sure. Yeah, not really sure where they all sat, but... yeah, I think Verde are kind of a tough nut to crack, and I did expect Machida to win this game. But I, at the same time, not to sound like a smart ass, but yeah, I think Verde are the team who can, you know, they draw a lot of games, so I'm not surprised that they did get something in the end.
Verde were the team that both John and Stuart predicted would miss out on the top six in their previously mentioned predictions, where they both had Matsumoto top. So, yes, you win some, you lose some, gents. But, yeah, thus ends the amazing season of Machida Zelvia, Stewart. And, yes, we've talked about them so many times, in recent months, of course, firstly because of the phenomenal season they were enjoying, but also the slightly odd situation where they're ineligible for either promotion or the playoffs. And, yeah, obviously you could see how much the prospect of winning the title meant to all the players, as John's referenced there at the full-time whistle. Well, pretty much everybody on the pitch slumped to the floor as well, because obviously the Tokyo Verde players didn't know their fate at that time, and they were probably thinking that a draw would not have been enough for them to qualify for the playoffs. But yeah, first things first, Machida, it's all finally said and done, and they finished up fourth. Considering where they come from and where they finished last season, that they've truly defied any sort of expectations, and they deserve a massive amount of credit, which I feel that we've rightly given them throughout the season. But yeah, just putting a bow on what has been a remarkable campaign for Zelvia.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I think we've all said it on the airwaves that this has been a fantastic season, and like their professionalism has been kind of like second to none. They've known that they probably weren't going to get promoted for much of the season, and then when it became official, they still didn't give up and they still put it all in. And you know, you just think like, well, I think I'm not sure what the others think. I think if they hadn't have had those two games cancelled by typhoons, which made them have a four-game run of away games, of which they lost two and drew one. I think if you wonder if those games had been played in the order they were supposed to be played in, would they have gained an extra point to finish in the top two? I think they probably would have done. And so the Machida supporters and Machida players should be incredibly proud of what happened, but a little bit of them will always think, what if we didn't have to play four away games in a like 2 week period? What if like we played kind of Kamatamare Sanaki when we were supposed to play them? What if we had got our stuff together and sorted out, like, a training ground or whatever. And so there's a kind of, I'm sure there's some kind of regret, and that'll probably play in. But I think this season has been nothing short of phenomenal for Matchida Zelvia, and I hope kind of the Matchida supporters and the people who watch J2 can recognize that sufficiently, because we, you know, it might not come around again, so enjoy it, really.
Yeah, very well said, Stuart. All right, so Charlie, we're getting ahead of ourselves slightly here, but obviously we're coming on to the first of our promotion playoff contenders here with Tokyo Verde away at Omiya this coming Saturday. So they've just finished up their 42-game season with a 1-1 draw away at Machida. And, from what you've seen of them since you've started covering J2, and, yeah, especially in recent weeks, of course, how are you feeling about Verde's chances as we head into the playoffs?
I think they've got a chance. I think Omi will be surprised and pleased that they've got the home advantage for the playoff game one. But their form has been a bit on and off. So I think Verde, I don't know, if I was Verde, I think, yeah, I'd give myself a decent-ish chance, but probably a little wary.
All right, well, obviously, we're going to come back and preview this game a little bit later, so John and Stuart, I'll get your thoughts in a bit more detail about Verde when we talk about playoff game one, as we're calling it. So let's go back to Stuart and the game you were at pitch side, as you said, Stuart, for the first half. FC Gifu playing spoilers for Avispa Fukuoka's playoff chances by holding them to a 0-0 draw at the Nagaragawa ground on Saturday. And Stuart, I saw a tweet from you throughout the day where you said that it was 0-0, but not through a lack of effort from Gifu. They were the better team for the most part, and a couple of really, really good chances that they spurned. They could have made the afternoon even worse for Avispa.
Yeah, I think anybody who watched this game would be hard pressed to tell which team was sixth and which team was 20th, really. I mean, Gifu were the better side for long periods of the game. And like, Avispa came out and, they started quickly. I think they forced a corner within the first 90 seconds. I think they had a couple of half chances, in the first 10 minutes or so. More or less after that, Gifu were the better side. They were making more of the running. And it was strange to watch at times, because there didn't seem to be that kind of urgency that I expected. You know, I expected Avispa to come out and just run and just try and get the game by the scruff of the neck, try and impose their will on it, and to try and get the goal which would have sealed their playoff place. But they didn't, and they looked static a lot of the time. They looked, I don't know what's the word I'm looking, maybe not lethargic, but kind of like they didn't have a dynamism about them, and like they had a couple of chances in the second half. Victor, our goalkeeper, made one really good save and one decent save, but you know, it wasn't a backs to the wall performance, which I thought it might have to have been by Gifu. We were missing our best midfield player. Kota Miyamoto was suspended, and so that was a concern before the game. This is not going to be a popular opinion amongst Avispa Fukuoka supporters, but Hisashi Jogo is, he's not the player they think he is. He's not the player that they need him to be, I don't think. He's too slow, I think. And, you know, he played, it was a really weird formation. Like, they played Jogo up front with three players behind him. So they must have thought, okay, Jogo can occupy the two centre halves, and Dudu Ricky Matsuda and someone else, I can't remember who it was, were playing in and around behind him, but he just looked slow. He had a couple of chances, but I think he held that it's kind of difficult to pin it on him saying he held the team back, but his selection didn't help. And, you know, after the game, Masami Ihara lost his job, whether that was mutual or whether that was him saying he wanted to go, whether that was from the club. It wasn't really a surprise because I think you've said it best on this podcast quite a few times that there's no reason that they should have missed the playoffs. There just isn't. They should have been in the top six. And yeah, Gifu should have won. It's the honest answer. And I spoke to Victor after the game. I spoke to Ryan De Vries, the forward, after the game as well. And he said the same thing. He said, look, if an alien came down from another planet and you asked them which side was heading for the playoffs and which side was battling against relegation, you wouldn't be able to tell. And Gifu played well, Avispa didn't, and you know, it's kind of a weird feeling after the game as well. Neither team was happy. There was one team a lot unhappier than the other, but you know, the supporters put a brave face on, but ultimately, yeah, they finished up on the outside looking in. So, yeah, unfortunately for Avispa.
I just quickly ask on Gifu, Stuart, because I think we've perhaps done Fukuoka to death over the last couple of pods, and we've not got anything positive to say. Maybe we should gloss over their season. But was there any sense? You mentioned that you watched the second half in the stands with the Gifu supporters, including yourself, on Saturday. Was there any sense of obviously people will be very pleased with such a good performance to round off the season? Was there any sense of kind of frustration that kind of performance hasn't been produced more often? Or maybe that perhaps the players were kind of playing with a bit of freedom because there's no pressure, and you know that kind of is something they should be looking to do more of during, like, how can I put it, actually just during the first 41 games maybe.
Yeah, I don't think there's that much frustration. I think the players I spoke to, and like even the fans around me. The fans around me. I'm not a magnet for fans, but the supporters around where I sit. It was kind of, oh, look what we can do. You know, like most of them were kind of saying, oh, look, if we can play like this next year, and if that's the level of competition that we have to play against, then yeah, there's no reason why we should be down where we are now in 20th position. I think people were kind of positive about what is lying in the future, as opposed to kind of, oh, geez, look, if we'd only played like that, we would have been in 15th this year, or that kind of stuff. And so there wasn't that much negativity. I think for the players, for them as well, I think it was kind of similar. Look, and yeah, they just said, look, we had that run in the middle of the year. We just couldn't turn it around. Like, we needed something. We needed to do something different, and we didn't do it. And that kind of made our season go off the rails. But, yeah, I think it was more about looking forward. And, of course, you had all the after, the end of season ceremony where it was all looking forward, like the sponsors have renewed for next year. The new kit was launched, and the manager signed a new contract. And one thing that might be of interest to some people, I don't know, but Hiroaki Namba, the veteran forward, made a speech to the fans after the game. He didn't necessarily say he was going to retire, but that was the kind of feeling that a lot of supporters got from it. He was almost in tears as he said thank you to the supporters. And so that might be one thing to keep an eye on for Gifu supporters. But yeah, I think it was more or less positive looking forward for next year.
All right, then. Well, before we move off this game, and I'm sorry to twist the knife for the likes of Navy Blue Wasp on Twitter, who deserves enormous praise for their magnanimous tweeting at the full-time whistle on Saturday afternoon. But, yeah, Stuart, I just have to ask about Fukuoka one more question. I mean, obviously, Masami Ihara is now leaving his post, and you mentioned regrets earlier for Machida about the way the end of the season panned out with games in hand, etc., etc. Is Ihara going to leave with one big regret that he didn't push all his chips into the centre of the table earlier on in this game? But you mentioned how poorly things were going for Fukuoka, and I mean he has eventually played his three aces up his sleeve, if you like, off the bench by the time Takayuki Morimoto came on with 10 minutes to go. But I mean, did he throw caution to the wind enough here? I mean, obviously he knew that if either Verdi or Omiya were to lose, then Avispa would qualify for the playoffs with a draw, and whether or not he was getting up to date information from his staff and what was going on in the other games, obviously we'll never know. But do you think Fukuoka, well, obviously they didn't, but why didn't they do enough to try and win this game outright and obviously take matters and their playoff qualification into their own hands, do you think?
I would assume that's the question the board had to say to Ihara as well, because I completely agree with all that. I don't think they, as you said, pushed all their chips in. I think part of them maybe was just maybe they were looking at other results instead of taking care of their own business. That, you know, like we said before, there are no goals between Verdi and Machida or Omiya or Fagiano or Kayama in the first half. Maybe they were getting information. Look, the other games are goalless. Just keep it tight and like don't concede or whatever they were being told. But yeah, I'm in complete agreement. I think they started the day in the playoff places. They were statistically a better team than Gifu, and they should have gone out and shown it, but they didn't, and that would be a huge regret. And like, you know, they barely squeaked past Kumamoto last week, and then they end up not beating Gifu to secure a playoff place. And I think, yeah, Ihara will leave with regrets, and you know, I think it's most definitely time for a change in Fukuoka, and whether they've got a few decisions to make on key players as well going into next year as well. So hard times and interesting times down in Fukuoka this off season, I would say.
Most definitely. And I had a sly dig there at Stuart and John for their predictions that, Tokyo Verdy would be the ones to miss out on the top six. Well, full disclosure, I'm pretty sure, although I don't remember 100%, I'm pretty sure that Fukuoka were my tips for the J2 title in Richie Palmer's hashtag JPred prediction game on Twitter before the season started. So there you go. Yeah, I get most things wrong. And that's just another example. We're moving on to the game that Charlie watched in full on Saturday afternoon. And yes, Omiya were the other of the top seven at kickoff to do the business. And the result for them is that they get to host this first game of the playoffs this coming Saturday at home against Tokyo Verdy. And yes, plenty of drama at the City Light Stadium, Charlie. Omiya going down to 10 men, but then Captain Fantastic Kosuke Kikuchi finding a way to give them a priceless winner.
Yeah, that's right. I was a bit concerned for Omiya at the beginning of this game, as they were the only guys that actually had to win, and they were without Mateus, who, like, although admittedly his form has dropped off a cliff a bit, is often like he's so important to that team for providing any like impetus and drive. So I was pretty worried about it. And, like, in the first half, Okuyama were definitely the better team. I think, like, Ishii was playing it pretty safe, maybe. And then I think Okuyama hit the post with Chung Chong Gong. I don't know if an amazing name, but I probably butchered that. and he hit the post. In the first half, and then the best chance fell for Genki, where they just sort of pulled back, and he blazed it wide, and you thought it's probably not going to be their day. And then I was expecting them to come out guns blazing second half, but then yeah, you're right. There was a sending off within like 7 minutes. I think Shimada got a second yellow, doing the most needless foul. And yeah, I think it was definitely deserved reds, and you thought it was probably only going to go one way. But yeah, then Captain Fantastic Kikuchi comes up. Genki, I think, took a cross from out wide, free kick from out wide, and then Hatao like raised, headed it, saved, and then yeah, Kikuchi was there, who I have sort of slammed before. I'm not sure how I think of him, but yeah, he's definitely a bit of a legend at the club, and he scored the winning goal there, which sent him through. And then Omiya did a pretty good job of shutting up shop from there on in. And I think they had one chance, Okayama, in the last 5 minutes. Samada had a really clear header, but nothing more. They did a really good job.
Indeed. And so, John, on last week's episode, you asked Steve Baum who he thought would fill the breach with Mateus suspended. Shintaro Shimada seemed like the most likely candidate, and indeed he did get the call from Masatada Ishii, but then worst case scenario for Shimada, he gets the call to start the game, but then he gets sent off in 7 minutes into the second half, as Charlie says.
I think this is the sort of thing where when it comes to predicting a game, and it can happen to us sort of Monday morning quarterbacks, but it can happen to managers as well. There's only so much preparation you can do. You can't legislate for players being injured or red cards. And especially, as Charlie said, it's incredibly and frustrating, I think, when players are sent off for stupid or needless challenges. I think we probably have to give Omiya a little bit of credit. I think whether we were a sort of a squirrel persuasion or not, we were discussing last time that perhaps they didn't have the cojones to go to Okayama and get all 3 points, and they certainly haven't sort of displayed a great deal of testicular fortitude in the games so far this season. So fair play, they did the job by hook or by crook, and it's earned them home advantage for the first leg or the first game in the playoffs. So despite the lack of Mateus, and I think his absence would be a worry, they got the job done, and that probably is something to build on, something that will stand them in good stead, I think.
All right, so let's segue on to our playoff preview. Stuart, I'll come to you first on this first game this coming Saturday with Omiya. Obviously, for them, the best-case scenario worked out over the weekend. They jumped up from 7th in the table to 5th, a perfect finale for them. And, with the Verdi and the Fukuoka, failing to win, that meant that they moved above those two teams, and they have home advantage for this first game. These two teams obviously met twice in the regular season, and both games ended in home wins. Omiya winning at the NAC 5 all the way back in match day 11, so that's not predictive at all, I would suggest. In match day 27, so a couple of months ago now, Verdi won 2-1 at Ajinomoto Stadium. But obviously the form book goes out the window, etc., etc. And obviously in the J2 playoffs, the added wrinkle of the home team only needing to draw to advance also plays a massive part here. So as we start to break down this game, where do you think it could be won and lost? And which way are you leaning, Stuart?
It's a tough one to call, actually. I think John and I have spoken a lot in the past about the coaching in J2 is really important. Teams that have good coaches and are set up well and know exactly what they have to do tend to do really well in this league. And Latina is a good coach. I mean, there's rumors about whether he'll actually be at Verdy next year in any event. He's been linked with Seretz or Osaka. But he's a good coach, and he'll know what to do, and he'll know how to set his team up. I know you just mentioned that they were beaten at the NAC 5 all the way back in April, but I think Tokyo Verdy are a little bit of a different proposition now. I think they've only lost one of their last six, I think, and it's kind of a while since they had a run of bad games, and I think this will be a close one. I can actually see it being a draw, which would mean that Omiya would go through by virtue of finishing higher in the league. I don't think there's a lot that separates these two teams, and I possibly see it being a draw. I think Mateus will be back. He was suspended, right? He wasn't injured.
Yeah, suspended.
I think Mateus coming back will give them a kick in the right direction. But I think the Tokyo Verdy setup will be kind of difficult for Omiya to play against. So I'm expecting a tight game. I'm not going to say it's a boring game. I think it will be tight, and I think the teams are pretty evenly matched, and I can see it ending in a draw if you're going to pin me down.
Okay, John. So if Stuart's prediction kind of pans out and things are heading for a draw with 10 minutes to go. I mentioned earlier in the question to Stuart, yeah, Fukuoka probably didn't do enough to throw the kitchen sink at Gifu and get the win that they needed. So let's say, for argument's sake, that, yeah, Omiya do a decent enough job of holding Verdy out until, let's say, the 75th or the 80th minute. Do Verdy have an X factor to bring off the bench, to somebody that they might be able to really throw a spanner and send some panic into the Omiya defence? And whether that eventually results in a goal or not obviously remains to be seen, and however the game pans out remains to be seen. But is there something that you can see that Verdy could do in a pinch late on in this game that could possibly swing things in their direction in a game that they obviously need to win?
Yeah, I think Stuart's already commented, and I agree pretty much 100% with his analysis of this game. I think it will be very tight. The thing about Verdi's coach, Lottina, and the word that I wanted to use on the pod for a while, I could never remember, is wily. He's a wily coach. And I think he might... What he has on the bench will depend on, this is a redundant sentence, will depend on what he started the game with. And what he's done in the past is he occasionally will spring a surprise, especially in the front three. He'll pick someone in one of the front three positions that's perhaps not an out-and-out forward, for example, just to kind of throw off, to sort of throw off the kind of organisation of the team. When Corky Anzai was at the club last season, he's now at Kashima Antlers, of course, but he would occasionally be picked as like the right-sided sort of the three-man forwards, just something that the other team wouldn't expect to throw them off. So I wouldn't be surprised if there isn't some kind of curveball in the starting 11 on Sunday, because that's happened in the past. But I think in terms of options off the bench, Alan Pinheiro is probably the one who wouldn't start but would come off the bench and add a bit of pace to the attack. There's also a young attacker who scored one or two goals this season, Kanya Fujimoto, who might be an option as well. I think they do have players who could come on. Maybe you should mention Leandro at this point, because he hasn't really looked fit enough to play the full 90 minutes so far. Whether he would be used from the start and then withdrawn, or whether he would be left on the bench to come on later, that might be another interesting call. So probably in terms of quality, it's Leandro. But in terms of pace, Alan Pinheiro or Fujimoto, probably the ones to maybe keep an eye on off the bench.
All right, and John, sir, I'll ask you another one. I mean, I've asked you a fairly game-specific question there. So, in general, how do you see things going? I mean, you might see Verdy winning this and not needing to worry about making an impact substitution off the bench with 10 minutes to go. So, what's your general feeling about things a few days out from the game, obviously?
It's a tough one to call. I think it is going to be very tight, as Stuart's already alluded to. I think what it might boil down to is I think on paper, Almia have a better squad than Verdi's. But the way that things have panned out this season, Verdi have actually extracted more from their resources. And I think you could perhaps go as far as saying Almia are a good squad that's not been coached particularly well. And Verdi have got an average squad that's been coached extremely, extremely carefully. So it'll be interesting to see that kind of those two butt heads, if you like. I kind of had a look, and I'm a bit biased because I watch Verdi more than Almia this season. I had a look at the kind of the goalkeeper, defence, midfield and attack, and hopefully no Almia fans will be too upset. I think the only place where Almia have got the edge in actual game play this season is in attack, where they have Genki Omai, who's a J1 level player for me. They have Mateus, who's got the kind of X factor that I don't think Verdi have. There's also even Robin Asimovic, who could come on and cause chaos, even though it's been noted that he doesn't really fit in with Almia's style of play. But if there's, 5 minutes left and they need a goal, he's just as effective as anybody else at kind of causing havoc in the penalty area. So I think in terms of attackers, Almia have got the edge, and I think that's where the difference could be made on Sunday. So I do think Almia have got the advantage. Obviously, home game, they only need to draw, and they do have a bit more of a goal threat for me. But in terms of goalkeeper, I think Verdi's goalkeeper, Kami Fukumoto, has had a better season than Shiota in the Almia goal. He's prone to mishaps. He had one at the end of the round 41 game against the Yamagata when he let in a soft goal. Luckily, it was right at the death and it didn't do any harm. Defensively, yeah, Almia might not drop that much if they dominate possession, but they're prone to ricks, prone to a few whiffs at the back as well. And in midfield, they have good players, but I don't think they really gel together. So I think, yeah, it's only up front. Genki Omai can score a goal out of nothing. Mateus can create chances out of nothing. Don't think Verdi have really got that cutting edge in their team. So I think I have to favour Almia just because the competition rules favour them. But it could be interesting. I think it could be tight. Maybe, yeah, like you mentioned, the last 10 minutes, the game could still be up in the air, could still be 0-0. And then you never know. But obviously, if Almia score and Verdi need two, I can't see them getting two. So we'll see. It's too close to call, I think. It should be very entertaining, if not in the traditional sense. It might be very, very dour, but kind of riveting is probably the word I'm looking for, rather than entertaining.
Fair enough. Then. And, yeah, as you were speaking there, John, yeah, I realise you're absolutely right. The game's being played on Sunday, of course. I think I said right back in the intro that the playoff first game would be on Saturday, but that is obviously incorrect. And listeners who picked that up from the start are, finally raising their hands in glee that I finally realised that. So, yes, Sunday is the day. And, Charlie, yeah, so this is the coming to the end of your first half season watching J2. So as Almia and Tokyo Verdy get set to square off, where do you see this game being won and lost? And I let you off easy with a prediction last time, didn't I? So I'm going to have to pin you down for one there, I think, on this occasion.
I think the way that it sets up with Almia only needing a draw, I think makes me almost more concerned, because when they're trying to play defensive, I'd be worried that they're going to go quite conservative, and that definitely doesn't give rise to their best football or being able to utilise their best players. And then I think I'm also quite concerned that he doesn't seem to know his best team. So I think, was it like he was playing Simovic up front? Well, he was playing Tomiyama, and then he switched to Simovic, and that wasn't working that well. And then I think he played, before Mateus was up front, he played up front with Genki. And yeah, I don't know really with Mateus coming back whether he's going to try that again, or I think it's most likely he's going to go and start with Simovic again and just try and sit back and try and scrape maybe a 1-0 or a 0-0. But I don't know, I'd be very wary. If I was going to go, I'd be tempted to go Verdi and stick my neck out there.
All right, fair enough then. John, I'll ask this question to you next, and I hate to ask it, but Yokohama FC obviously await in the second round of the playoffs on the Sunday, the 2nd of December. They will face either Omiya or Verdi. And for the record, at Mitsuzawa, Yokohama FC drew with both potential opponents, with Omiya just a few weeks ago back in match day 38 and Verdi back in June. Is there, from a Yokohama FC perspective, is there a one of these teams that you think suits them better? It gives them a better chance of winning their way through to play whoever finishes 16th in J1. So, yeah, ignoring that second game from an Omiya or Verdi perspective and purely looking at it from Yokohama FC's angle, is there one of these two teams that you think they match up better with than the other?
I'm not sure that they would have a preference. I think just the fact that they're at home and only need the draw to get to the next game will probably be enough for them to focus on. And I think the coach, Tavares, has made a lot of them kind of just focusing on their own game rather than what other teams can bring. But yeah, I'm kind of repeating myself, but I think because Omiya have got a player like Omai, who is kind of very hard to keep quiet. If you give a sort of free kick away in and around the box, you're in real trouble. I think they would prefer, it's probably not a team that suits them better, but I think they prefer to face Tokyo Verdy just because they haven't got Genki Omai or Mateus in the team. So it's just kind of those attacking players with the X factor that they probably want to avoid, I think. Yeah, it's difficult to say. One thing to keep in mind, I mean, Yokohama FC going into this playoff game on a pretty good run of form. I think they're unbeaten in 7 or 8 now, and they won the last 4 straight. But their record against other kind of Kanto teams, just to big up my Kanto Bites alter ego for a moment, they haven't done particularly well this season. I think that, I'm not sure if, you mentioned they drew a couple of games. I'm not sure if they've beaten Verdi this season or beaten Omiya. I'm not sure that their record against other Kanto teams is pretty weak. That might be something that will play in their mind whoever they face in that game. They'll be looking to kind of put that right and make sure it doesn't influence them mentally. But no, I don't think they have a preference apart from, you're always happy if you don't have to face Genki Omai, I think, if you're a J2 defender.
No, fair enough then. All right, so Stuart, let's wrap things up at the foot of J2. Obviously, the one other important thing we needed to sort out on the final day was who would finish bottom out of Kumamoto and Sanuki. At the start of play, Roasu Kumamoto were ahead of Kamatamare on the goal difference, and they finished 3 points above them in the table after, Roasu won 3-0 at home over Ehime FC, and Sanuki were beaten at home 2-0 by Kyoto. So the possibility still remains for now Kumamoto to survive, Stuart. But that possibility looks slightly less possible now after the weekend's action in J3 with the Numazu drawing. But if you could just wrap up the way things went on the final day for our bottom two.
Yeah, so basically Kumamoto took care of their own business. They finally won at their home Egao Stadium. They won 3-0, showed glimpses of their good attacking form, and while at the same time Sanuki were busy getting turned over at home by Kyoto. And it should be mentioned that with this result, obviously Kamatamari Sanuki finished bottom of the league. They had a minus 44 goal difference. They only scored, I think, they scored 28 goals all year. I mean, it's hard, in the same way that it's hard to argue that finishing in the top two isn't deserved, well, it's definitely true at the bottom, because Sanuki have been pretty rubbish all year long, it has to be said. Their coach, Makoto Nishino, has called it a day after 9 years in charge. And I think that's a kind of story that's flying under the radar a bit with all the other more slightly higher profile managerial departures. But Nishino has been in charge of Sanaki's rise from the regional leagues through the JFL and up into J2. And, yeah, it'll be different there without him. The supporters are very unhappy. I know they unfurled some banners at the end of their game, questioning the board. There's a lot wrong with that club, and there doesn't seem to be a lot right with the club on the flip side. So, their best case scenario is doing a Gunma, really, like going down, getting their stuff together and trying to make a promotion push next year. We're still in the odd situation with Kumamoto, not really knowing kind of what fate has befallen them. Obviously, they're pushing or they're supporting Numazu's top two push in day three. Numazu drew the weekend where Kagoshima and Gunma won their games. So I think, without looking at the table, I think Numazu are 5 points behind second place Kagoshima. They do play each other next weekend, which is fun for all involved. But it's looking highly likely that Kumamoto will join Kamatamari Sanaki in J3 next year.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, that is pretty much it for what was a wild and woolly J2 match day 42. Yeah, not as many goals as we probably expected when things got going. But, yes, no shortage of drama. And just before we go, one more item of business, of course. The Japan national team played a 1-1 draw against Venezuela in Oita last Friday night, and John, it was a case of Hiroki Sakai giveth and Hiroki Sakai taketh away.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think like everybody else, we were forced to watch on the infernal. Was it TBS? I think it was TBS, wasn't it? The coverage that kind of makes you want to drill out your own brain with a Black and Decker. But all of their kind of pre-match farrago, justifiably, I suppose, was about the kind of attacking trio of Minamino and Nakajima and who's the other one? Thank you. Yes. Okay. But yeah, it kind of it sort of pleased me that then most of the kind of post-match headlines were nothing to do with them, and it was all about Hiroki Sakai. But yeah, very really well taken goal, I think, that he scored with that kind of crisp volley. Perhaps the goalkeeper, Stuart as a goalkeeper, would probably be disappointed if he'd not got that one in, not kept that one out himself. But then I think the penalty decision, Miyoshida didn't seem to agree, obviously, and Sakai was arguing with the referee, but it looked a pretty clear penalty to me. I think once you come sort of barge into the back of somebody in the penalty area and they're in possession, doesn't matter how accidental or how clumsy it was, it's going to be, I think, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a penalty. But I thought Japan again played well, and I've enjoyed all the games they've played with Moriyasu in charge. So roll on Kyrgyzstan on Tuesday.
All right, and yes, as John mentioned, Kyrgyzstan on Tuesday night for the Samurai Blue. And just before we finish, one more thing that I noticed from your Twitter account in the past week, Stuart, some kind of a J2 supporters meeting in Gifu towards the end of last week. What was the story behind that? And it looked like it was fairly well attended by supporters of various J2 clubs.
Yeah, it's kind of a therapy group for J2 people. It's actually, it's an event called, Moero J2, which means, strong support for J2. And it's usually held in Tokyo. The two organizers of the event, one is a Gifu supporter and one is an Avispa Fukuoka supporter who owns a sports bar in Tokyo called Kitten, which is kind of famous in the J2 community because they show all the J2 games live on a big screen there. So obviously with Gifu playing Fukuoka in Gifu on the final day, they moved the venue from Tokyo to Gifu, and there was a lot of Gifu fans, Fukuoka supporters, some Yamagata fans, there's Kumamoto fans, there was, I think, who else? Oh, a couple of Machida supporters as well. And we had the FC Gifu president was there. He did a Q&A session, and there was a documentary filmmaker as well that you probably wouldn't have seen it in the Tokyo area, but in the Tokai area where I live, there was a documentary on it was called Old Rookie, and it's about a 40-year-old he was professional in Mongolia, who joined FC Gifu's second team, which plays in the regional league, and it was kind of a documentary following him about his dream and his steps to try and make it as a professional in the J League, which was really interesting to watch. And the director was there, and there's a Q&A with him, and there are a couple of journalists as well, like talking about how difficult / how interesting it is to cover J2 as well. So yeah, it was a really fun event actually. It meant I missed the Japan Venezuela game, but I don't think I missed that much. And yeah, it was a good event to attend. I don't know if anyone listening to this will be interested in attending. It's all in Japanese, so I mean, it's good listening practice as well. But the next installment of it is on December the 28th in Tokyo. If anybody really wants to go or get any more information, just check me out on Twitter at @sushi_football. I'd be more than happy to put you in touch with some of the organizers. But yeah, it was a fun event.
All right, sounds excellent. All right, well, that is it for this week. So, Stuart, I'll come straight back to you and say thank you very much for guesting on the podcast again. And, enjoy the playoffs, and well done to Gifu for firstly for hanging on, but then also, giving it a real go against the Fukuoka on Saturday. I'm sure you feel some sympathy for Vispa supporters, but yes, you're very happy with the way your guys attacked that game. So, once again, thanks very much, and hope to speak to you again soon.
Thanks for having me on again. It'll be good to watch the playoffs, and good luck to your particular teams, whoever you may support. Yeah.
Excellent stuff. All right, Charlie, yeah, been great to have you on again. Thanks very much for your time. And yes, as with Stuart, enjoy the playoffs. In this case, your first taste of it. And as I say, I hope to speak to you again soon.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
All right, John. Both of these playoff games are going to happen in the Kanto area. So I don't know if you're going to be able to get along or not. But for now, again, as with the other two guys, thanks for your time. And enjoy the playoffs.
Yeah, thanks very much. My attendance at these games is, shall we say, under negotiation. But I'll just end by saying I think Sit Back with Simovic sounds like a pretty nice sort of Sunday evening TV, you know, maybe like a kind of chat show. Perhaps that might be something he could go into after he retires. But I hope everybody enjoys the football. Obviously, J1's back at the weekend, and the playoffs are coming on in J2. So still lots going on. And, hope everybody enjoys the games.
All right, then. So that is it for the J-Talk podcast for another week. My thanks to John Steele, Charlie Houghton, and Stuart Smith. And, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to wrap up the Omiya versus Tokyo Verde playoff match. And, as John mentioned, the return of J1. The match day 33 will take place this weekend. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
You okay there, Charlie? Oh.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.